Welcome back to In Search of Tarot, a podcast that examines, questions, and reimagines our approach to life and the cards.
Through guest interviews and in-depth discussions, we'll explore and expand the beautiful complexities of spirituality, philosophy, magic, and more.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Angie.
And we're your hosts for this fascinating ride.
Thanks for being here with us.
Today's guest is Meg Jones-Wall, she, they, a queer, chronically ill tarot reader, writer, photographer, and the creator of 3AM Tarot, a columnist and editor for Autostraddle, and a regular contributor to Astrology Answers. Meg's work has also appeared in Wired, Catapult Magazine, Witchology, and more. Finding the Fool is her first book. Before we launch into today's conversation, I wanted to let you know that I've opened my books for a new recorded reading offering that I'm really excited about. These 30-minute tarot readings begin with deep dives into your birth cards and cards of the year, followed by additional pulls around the questions and themes that are on your mind and which you've shared with me via the appointment intake form. I've been really surprised how much joy recording these readings has offered to me, and the feedback that I've received has been really incredible. I was talking to a friend recently about when you work with a tarot reader that you don't know very well, it's sort of a large ask to dive so deeply in with a stranger. There's a lot of vulnerability that's required, and that's not always an intimacy that can be easily built in 30 or 60 minutes together. And so offering these recorded readings allows you as the recipient to make space for yourself, to make sure that you're grounded and ready to really take in whatever wants to come through, and also allows you the privacy to experience whatever emotions arise or triggers that come up or anything like that. And on my end, it really allows me to share freely and openly with you and just kind of allow whatever wants to come through to come through. So they've been really special, and if you are someone that is maybe a little short on time or just prefers to take things in at your own pace and also be able to listen back to this reading anytime you like, I've dropped the link to book in the show notes, and I would love to do a recorded reading for you. All right, now on to today's conversation with Meg Jones-Wall.
So, yeah, my name is Meg. I use she, they pronouns. And I right now am a writer primarily, I think, but photographer, tarot reader, creator, explorer, questioner, seeker are all very much parts of my like personal identity, entangled up, you know, the way that I work, because my work is creative and because it is in this like primarily now in this like really spiritual realm versus my past, which was like being a food photographer and like doing all of this like more artistic work. I think, yeah, so much of my day-to-day right now in these days is in this like deep place of introspection and questioning myself and questioning my work and really trying to understand how what I do fits into bigger pictures and how the stories that I'm telling, both to myself and to other people, are contributing to like broader narratives and broader conversations around tarot and spirituality and magic and transformation and all of that.
Awesome. I did not know that you'd worked as a food photographer.
I have had many lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have my undergrad degree was in technical theater. I did stage management and event production.
Okay.
And then I have a master's degree in gastronomy, which is food studies. And I have little silverware tattoos. And I worked as a freelance food and events photographer for about a decade. And I would still be doing it if it wasn't for the pandemic. I had been writing and everything during that time. And I did like hotel reviews and restaurant reviews and different things like that alongside the photography, but restaurants and parties were not where I wanted to be in 2020. And so
yeah.
I kind of shifted to being much more about the writing versus the photography. And the photography is still there. I'm always going to love it deeply. But yeah, the writing is has taken. You can write at home.
Yeah. I mean, that also kind of explains the beautiful aesthetic of your Instagram. Like all the photos, you know, are always so beautiful. And
yeah, it's very important to me. Like, I also can talk about Libra and my chart and my Venus and Libra as a final depositor in my fifth house and all of that. But yeah, aesthetics are very important to me. And visuals just for me are such a critical piece of the story that they've always been really important to me in my work.
Yeah, and we share a theater background as well. Yeah. So that's super cool.
So many of us. It's so funny. Like, I mean, I know you said you were, when we were chatting before we started recording, that you were listening to my podcast with Rebecca Skolnick, which is great. Yeah. And if you haven't listened to it, please listen. Bea is brilliant. But yeah, also theater background. Like, I feel like a lot of us that I'm connected with in this tarot world have theater backgrounds or like visual arts backgrounds.
Yeah. So I want to kind of start with the introduction. You know, we're talking about your book today. It's fantastic. I want to say to start. Yeah. And we were kind of laughing before we hit record that, a while back when you were starting to write, that at one point you had kind of disconnected from me because we both view tarot in such a very closely similar way. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be like two people just nerding out on like the same view.
Totally
just,
the same day.
Yeah. It's like to see this book in print and to see these ideas in print, like I just really align with the way that you view the cards. And it's really awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. I wish I could remember exactly what it was. It was like a newsletter that you had sent out and I was reading and I was like, yes, this is exactly what I was just writing about. I should probably set a little boundary for myself here, because you know there's so much, and I feel like especially in like astro circles and tarot circles, I've been seeing so much talk about like citing your sources and like being responsibly like talking about where these ideas came from, and I was like, some of these ideas have come from me, and also this is a broader conversation in the tarot world right now, and I need to be really vigilant about listening to myself and like honoring the ideas that are coming from within me and not letting those things get tangled up with other things that I'm reading and seeing. So yeah, I had to unsubscribe from a newsletter, which made me really sad, but I'm on it again. Because I think you're brilliant. I love what you do, but yeah,
it's a good funny line.
Writing a book is so weird.
Yeah, I'm sure. So let's go into that introduction. And you know, you really get very deep, very fast in the introduction and dive really, you know, deeply and vulnerably into like, you know, your childhood. And, so, you know, you explain that you grew up amidst a very conservative, you know, religious group of people, and that you even, I could not believe this, that you graduated from a Christian college that required you to sign a document every semester promising that you weren't queer.
Yep.
I've never heard of anything like that.
Yeah. It's very standard at Christian colleges and like Bible colleges and evangelical colleges. Ours was called a life and conduct statement, but they have different names at different places. But yeah, it's essentially a pledge that you are going to live according to biblical standards as interpreted by the college and the college board. And that included some like very weird logistical things. Like it also included like, you can't have a bike in your dorm room, but it was mainly like for spiritual things. And one of the main paragraphs that I had to read every single time I signed it was that you were not permitted to engage in homosexual relationships, homosexual activities, or homosexual feelings. I need to go back and look at the exact language, but it's intense. Wow. And every time I signed it, I had to be like, that's not me. That's okay. That's fine.
Right. Yeah. That's, I can't believe
in
that.
In a brutal way.
Yeah. Right. And you write about, something after that I really appreciated, because it's very nuanced, and I know I can understand this feeling. So I'm going to quote you. You say, I knew that the faith I'd always clung to was hurting me deeply, but going through life without it felt even more traumatic. So can you kind of talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think there's two parts to that, because one is the kind of faith community that you live in when you are in, you know, these specific religions and ideologies, the people that you are spending time with that feel the same way, and the way that like separating yourself from that, you lose community in that. Mm-hmm. My partner, Gina Kadlik, wrote a beautiful memoir called Heretic. And a lot of it dives into that loss of community and the way that like you have to separate yourself from those people because they see you differently when you say that you're not going to have the same kind of faith and the same kind of relationship with God as you used to and as they do. Mm-hmm. But it's also just the internal piece of having a God that you are speaking to, or, you know, something that you're praying to, or a set of rules that you're living by, and a way that you're practicing spirituality in the day-to-day life, like challenging that and feeling like you have to leave that behind without anything else to fill that hole is a very lonely and honestly really terrifying prospect. You know, and so for me, looking at this God I'd spent my entire life believing in and being like, actually, I don't know if I want to continue having a relationship with this God. Like, I want to challenge my own conceptions of God, and I want to see what other gods are out there, and like what else spirituality can look like. That's a really lonely road to walk. And it's a really big decision to make, and a really scary decision to make in a lot of ways. And so I very much found tarot in that kind of set of moments of challenging everything I'd believed my whole life and trying to figure out what my life was going to look like if I took that huge piece of it out or reimagined what kind of shape it was going to take.
And you explained that it was through the act of reading, kind mm-hmm. of, which I really love because I'm a huge reader, that you first came kind of into this world of magic. You know, will you kind of talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, I know I say in this introduction, I don't want to repeat verbatim what I wrote there, but yeah, for me, books were very much portals into other worlds. And I know they are for a lot of kids, especially if you're like queer and closeted or like living in difficult circumstances, or you have something in yourself that you're trying to understand or explore, or something in your life that you're trying to escape from. You know, books can be such an immersive, safe place to kind of live and devote energy to. And for me growing up, I didn't read a lot of books that kind of had magic as a component, unless they were like The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe or other things that were like acceptable in Christianity and in the kind of like white evangelical Christianity that I was raised in, to be very specific about that. But yeah, as I started to kind of expand what I was reading and what kind of media I was consuming and what kinds of worlds I would let myself traverse in my imagination, magic became something I just was so drawn to. And like, both in an intellectual nerdy, like, how does magic work in this world? What are the rules of magic in this world way? Because I like that shit. And I'm a Gemini rising, and I always want to understand how things work. But also just the spiritual component, like the ways that magic was something that people were really devoting themselves to, and the ways that it took up space and gave access to power and courage in a very specific kind of way, felt kind of like how God had felt for me. And I think the parallels there just felt so intriguing. And I just kept reading. I just kept gathering all of my books. And like, it was like, I didn't think of it as a formal research project, but in retrospect, that's kind of what it felt like. I was like Googling books, because it quickly became, oh, tarot is actually a real world thing. Like, that's a thing I could go get. And so I remember Googling, like trying to find every fictional book that had tarot cards as a prominent character or prominent, tarot in a way that like would serve the plot or like was a critical piece of the story, and just like devouring all of those books. I wanted to understand how tarot could serve a function even in a fictional world. That was kind of the gateway, the entry point.
You should post or publish that list.
I know, I should make a syllabus.
Yeah, I would love that. I would love that so much. One of my favorites is in Dune Messiah, the way that they talk about tarot in Dune Messiah is like, it's kind of how I think about tarot sometimes now, actually.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah, but it's interesting too, because I'm wondering, first of all, do you still identify as religious now in any way or?
No, not really. Okay. I consider myself spiritual. I consider myself devoted. I have relationships with things outside of myself. And I'm also more and more embracing like kind of an animist perspective on the world and the collective. But yeah, I wouldn't really describe myself as religious anymore.
Okay. Yeah. Cause it's interesting. I remember when I was deciding to come out, and I grew up very similarly. I grew up in the Baptist church and then, and then Episcopalian eventually just because of the choir, we switched.
Yeah. You gotta have a good choir.
but then towards the moment I think I was 20 when I came out. And I remember that summer I read the Bible just like obsessively. And I really was, I think, just trying to grapple with like, you know, am I damned to hell? Like if I come out, you know, and kind of being like, you know, eventually what I honestly came to is just like, well, if that is what God is going to do, then I guess I'm just going to hell. Like, I just was kind of like, I was like, I can't, you know,
I get really existential about it. Right. It's like,
I was like, I mean, and I was like, but I can't really see I just don't know why that would be the case. Like what use it would have, like why God would like want to test people in that way, you know, yeah. but this is just who I am, whatever.
Yeah. So, I had a very similar journey for what it's worth.
Okay. Yeah. That's kind of what I was curious because like the reading, I mean, what I hear in that is that same kind of like searching for like, who am I? And like, is this okay to be who I am? And yeah. So like, can you talk as much as you know, care to share about that turning point or like how you kind of got there?
For coming out or for tarot?
Yeah.
Or
for both? for coming out. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I kind of glossed over this, in saying that my major was in technical theater, which it was, but my minor was in biblical and theological studies. Mm-hmm. And that was in large part because I kept going to homosexuality panels and I kept taking classes on the New Testament because I wanted to understand precisely what Jesus said about being gay and about like homosexuality, because the church that I was raised in had very specific and very harsh views about homosexuality. And I heard those from the pulpit, not quite on a weekly basis, but on a very regular basis. Where I grew up in the time that I grew up, like the civil union versus marriage debate and all of that was just rampant and it was everywhere. And so it was very much part of like the political climate, or not that it isn't now, but like it was very much a visible part of the political climate in a way that had me thinking about it a lot. And I identify as bisexual and queer. And so like, for me, it was very easy to just hide from myself. And lean into the relationships that were acceptable and just try to ignore the attractions that were not. And that double-edged sword of hiding in plain sight kind of thing. And so, it did eventually reach a bubbling point. I was later, I graduated from college in 2007, and then I got married to a man that I met in that college in 2009. And I was 23 when I got married. And so I don't think I came out. I don't think I started coming out, because it's, you know, it's a process, but until I was like 26 or 27. And in that time, I was doing so much back and forth of like seeing myself clearly and then going right back into denial and really like just playing this inner tug of war with myself. But I very distinctly remember the moment that I was sitting at my kitchen table with my New King James Bible out, reading all the clobber verses. And which, if you didn't grow up evangelical, the clobber verses are the ones that list all the worst sins. and these days are almost always translated to include homosexuality, which is a very specific choice that I'm not going to get into the history of, but, and having like an auto straddle, piece open on my computer that was talking about being able to have faith while being queer, and just sobbing, because I just knew that that was me and that I'd been suppressing and denying that for such a long time because it felt safer. And yeah, it very much came to a moment when I was like, why would God make me like this? Like, what's the purpose of this? Like exactly what you said, like, what does this serve? What does this do? What could this possibly accomplish? And yeah, I just had to own it.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah. So now let's focus on the tarot coming out. And one of the things that you talk about in the book that I am so on board with is the lack of connection to the Rider-Waite-Smith deck and the way that deck, you know, so often gets pushed on people that are starting to, you know, read. So I'm going to quote you again. You say, quote, "So many of the websites and beginner's guides that I found urged tarot newbies to start with the Rider-Waite-Smith deck, citing its long history and traditional layered symbolism. But as a queer, chronically ill woman, I didn't feel drawn to it in the slightest." Yeah. So just like expand on that, because I'm just going to bask in that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always so nice to meet people that have a similar reaction to it, because I do feel like it is such a commonplace thing, that it's so accepted actually, that it's very refreshing to talk to people that are like, yeah, no. I was so frustrated when I decided that I wanted to buy my first deck, because I just kept running into this. You have to start with this deck. It was in everything. And I was looking for people to give me permission to not buy this deck first. And I was really struggling to find it, because it is just so commonplace and so prevalent. And I do think that more modern books, that are coming out are moving away from that finally, which is so nice to see. But all of the tarot books that people would be like, this is the one you have to read, this is the Bible, this is the way to start, all say this. And, you know, I grew up in a place where rules were part of the religion, you know, where like adherence to the rules, faith without works is dead. Like adherence to the rules is a reflection of belief and importance and value. And so, I was really scared to not use this deck, but I just didn't like it. And I had that experience of like going to different websites and like looking at all these different decks and trying to talk myself into buying it and putting it in my cart and like looking at all the different, the centennial version and like the, you know, like the slightly different versions. I'm like, maybe if it's black and white, it'll resonate differently, but I just couldn't get myself to buy it. I couldn't do it. And it was months of like talking to myself, like, I'm going to buy a tarot deck. It's fine. I'll just buy whatever one I want. And then hesitating and, mm-hmm. and trying to convince myself to buy this deck. And I mean, there are things we can pick apart about it, certainly, but I don't think it in whole, it's like a bad deck or like, right. or like an irresponsible deck to be using in 2023. Like, I think if it resonates with you and you feel good about using it, like that's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But the point for me was to use a deck that I wanted to build a relationship with and that I wanted to be in daily communication with, you know, like working with tarot for me is very much about like having a conversation with the images that are coming forward and the ideas that are coming forward. And I didn't want to be having that conversation with a deck I didn't like, because I knew I wouldn't want to use it. I'm like, if I can't even make myself buy this thing, what's it going to be like reading with it? Mm-hmm. And so, I didn't see myself in it and I didn't feel drawn to it. I didn't feel that attraction connection that you want to have with something that you're planning to use on a daily basis and like engage with in such an intimate and like deep and like spiritual way. I wanted to love my tarot deck.
Right.
And I stand by the decision to not buy it. But it was a very interesting experience to be having this war with myself. Like I wanted to start a thing and I didn't want to start it wrong, but I also right. didn't want to start it in a way that felt unfaithful to who I actually was. And in like seeing this as a step away from this really restrictive religion, it eventually became, am I really going to like let a different set of rules dictate this new thing that I'm trying to do just for myself?
Yeah.
Am I really going to like force myself to constrict and perform in a different way that I've done the rest of my life? Like, isn't this supposed to be different?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, because like someone I was talking to recently brought this up, like, or I heard it somewhere, you know, that like leaving an oppressive system, like a religious oppression or, you know, whatever is like the first step, but then mm-hmm. you have to then like deconstruct kind of everything that you had learned from that. Mm-hmm. And like, that's the part of the journey that often gets kind of skipped or like undervalued, yeah. you know? And so that's why I totally agree. Like so often in the magical community, as well as any other community, like just the same structures end up getting replicated, you know,
absolutely.
Again, in just a different way.
Yeah.
And like you said, like there's nothing wrong, like quote unquote. Well, I mean, there are questionable things to me about some of the like,
same.
where the images came from or, yeah. you know, the history mm-hmm. behind it. But, you know, like, I don't have a problem with someone working with it as long as they, you know, are aware. And that's the part, yeah. I mean, that's why, that's for me, what bothers me the most is that when, for most people, when they come into tarot, they don't really know anything about this history or, you know, or even right. maybe that there are other options. And so pushing that particular deck, like onto new people without telling them the history, A, and also mm-hmm. telling them that there are other options available that oftentimes are very closely symbolically aligned with the Rider-Waite-Smith,
totally.
You know, that's what kind of bothers me. And also that honestly, that money is getting funneled oftentimes back to like US games when it could be going to like an independent creator
totally.
Or, you know, just like all of that. Yeah. So that's kind of that's like why I'm always kind of on a soapbox about like, let's go yeah. beyond this, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, like so many of the decks that I use do fall absolutely within the Rider-Waite system. You know, I have at least three decks I can see right now that like are queer or modern or contemporary or whatever, like redrawings or reimaginings of the Rider-Waite-Smith. And like, you know, some of those foundational things that are in that deck are really powerful and can be really useful.
Right.
But I think we have to be willing to move beyond like how that was set and allow space for other people to be able to see themselves within decks and like imagine themselves within decks and like carve out space for all of these different identities. Like why would we want to restrict it to just people that like feel like they are represented by a certain deck, or they just want like one specific kind of story. Like, I think there's a lot we can do with that. And yeah, that, and I also always want to support like independent decks and like queer made decks and like BIPOC decks. And like, that's so much more interesting than just being like, we have to keep using this one really cis, really heteronormative, really white deck.
Yeah.
like let's dream bigger, guys. Want something more for ourselves.
And it's like, it's kind of that colonial pressure of like purity, you know, this
is how it's, this is the one.
Like, yes, this is the way. Yeah.
No, I loved your, sorry, I'm going to talk about you for a second. I really loved your Shuffling Through History series. I think it's still going, but like, I love how you talk about how like, the Rider-Waite-Smith was actually not the very first like pictorial deck. And this actually has been a thing that has been done before, but we do, we just hold this deck as such a sacred object. And I don't ever want to minimalize the impact that it had on tarot history and the importance of it and the way that it was so much more accessible to a lot of people. But I just don't think we have to see it as this holy, can't ever be reimagined, only thing we can ever use. Like that just, that's so restrictive. And yeah, it just pulls us right back into those familiar, got to follow all of these rules, like patterns that I'm really trying to break. And I will spend the rest of my life trying to break, but
Right. Yeah. So what I'm curious about for you, because you, in this book, you don't have any illustrations, which I think is awesome.
Yeah.
And, but I was surprised, honestly, that you got away with that because I've heard.
It was not easy.
That's what I've heard. I've heard from so many friends who have written books. And when I questioned the Rider-Waite-Smith, some friends have reached out to me and said, well, part of that is actually the pressure from the publisher to put those certain images into the book. So how did you go about that? Like, how was that for you?
Yeah. So, Wiser, and I'm just going to say off the bat, Wiser is wonderful. I love my publisher, you know, like they're great. But yeah, like it was in the original proposal that there would not be images. It was something that I believed in so, so strongly because I had other books that would talk really openly about, different decks and like using all these like much broader interpretations than just what we see within the Rider-Waite-Smith. But they would still have illustrations of a specific tarot deck. And it's so easy when you're writing about all of those things to be able to just lean on the imagery of that specific deck that you're working with. And whether that's the Rider-Waite-Smith, and obviously there are incredible tarot scholars out there, you know, like Rachel Pollack, that are doing this amazing work in analyzing the imagery and symbology and all of that of the Rider-Waite-Smith. But like, even if you're using a different deck that's not the Rider-Waite-Smith, you still, it's so easy to fall into the trap of, well, this is the symbolism of this specific deck. Mm-hmm. And if it's a Rider-Waite-Smith based system, then you're ultimately just pointing right back to that one very specific set of keywords and set of interpretations for the card. And it's so important to my work and has been for such a long time to not tie my understanding of a card to one specific deck's depiction of that card. Mm-hmm. And so it just didn't feel right to, it didn't feel authentic at all to have any deck in there, but especially not the Rider-Waite. I feel like I'm like, Meg, famously hates Rider-Waite-Smith, Jones Wall. Like, I feel like it's like become such a piece of my brand, which I never really intended. Like, it's weird to be like, like seen as someone that does not like something versus like for the things that I do. But like, I do feel really strongly about like giving ourselves permission to think beyond this one deck. And so it was part of the original book proposal that I submitted in 2020. And I have had to fight tooth and nail to not have that be true. Like, again, I'm not trying to throw my publisher under the bus, but at one point a cover was shown to me that had the Rider-Waite-Smith Fool on it, because Finding the Fool was also part of, as a title, was also part of the original thing. And I was like, absolutely not. Like, I was like, how dare you? Like, we're not having this, like, I don't want any imagery. And so the glyphs, and there's astrological glyphs and zodiacal glyphs and numbers. And I drew all of those. And that is the only, and we also have like little rectangles for tarot cards as part of like the spread sections, but those are the only images in the book. Everything else is just text. But yeah, it was a fight, and it was something that got revisited over and over and over every time we were reimagining the book or talking about rearranging different portions. It would be reintroduced. Well, what if we, you know, we could very easily fit, you know, cards in here, or this would be such a nice addition, and this would be so helpful to readers. And I was like, if this can't be a Tarot 101 book because it doesn't have pictures, then it's not a Tarot 101 book. But I don't want imagery, because I think it immediately invites focusing on a specific deck. And I wanted anyone using any deck from any background with any identity to be able to use a deck that worked for them and have this book be just as useful, no matter what deck people were using. And that was just so central to the concept of Finding the Fool from the very beginning.
Yeah. I can see how, it would feel different and challenging maybe for a publisher because, you know, tarot is a visual art form.
Yeah. And so, and I'm like, a visual person. So right. It felt like a funny thing to be fighting for, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm wondering too, like, cause this is something that I personally am always just kind of mulling over, and contemplating is like the meeting place between, the meanings of the cards that kind of transcend the cards or like, you know, are connected more to the archetype, which also like transcends the image. Versus like the actual art, you know, that is in front of you. You know, how do you, like, I would say right now in my practice, I lean a little bit more towards just turning the card over and like seeing what comes to me on that particular day from that very particular image. Yeah. Where are you in that spectrum right now in your practice?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, I think that's similar to where I am. Like when I initially started, I had one deck and it took me a long time to start bringing other decks into my practice because I didn't want to be someone with a million decks. I also live in New York. Like I don't have space for that. Like,
right.
But I think as I started using other decks, I found it so helpful to see how different artists and different writers and different tarot practitioners could imagine these cards and these concepts in such different ways, and how different artwork and different keywords and different like little white books and everything would invite in all of these other interpretations. And so it became much less about this is the right way to see this card, and this is the way this card is in every deck, no matter what deck I'm using. It became much more, what is this version of this card inviting me to learn about what this card is and like what this card has to say, and allowing all of those interpretations to live simultaneously within a card versus like, this is the only thing this can possibly mean. Mm-hmm. And yeah, some of that might also be my theological background now that I'm saying it. But yeah, I think for me, it like when I decide, when I sit down, when I'm like, I want to pull some cards today and do some reflecting and do some work. I first think about what deck I want to have a conversation with and about what I know about that deck and how that deck's energy feels to me and the kinds of conversations that I have historically had with that deck. And finding one that's going to match my energy and my question and the things that I want to parse and like sort through myself. And yeah, then whatever card comes up, I'm like, okay, this is a gift from this deck specifically, but that doesn't mean that I can only use the language or the dialect or, you know, whatever, the accent that this one deck is offering. And so I generally do start, as you say, with like, what is this, what's in this exact card that's coming up from this specific deck? But I try really hard to not limit my interpretation of that card in that moment to only what that one deck has to offer, and instead think about everything I know about that card and everything that that card has offered me in the past, even if it's not from this specific deck. And I think that gives me a really expansive tool set to use when I'm reading, especially if like I pull a card and I don't understand how it's speaking to my question or speaking to my challenge or speaking to, you know, whatever topic I'm thinking about.
Right. Yeah. The first sentence of the first page of part one opens with a very simple question. You say, who are you? And I really loved that because that is something that I've come to believe is really important about learning tarot, is that the first step and the continual process along with learning the tarot is learning about yourself, you know, and understanding your lens and your sense of the world and your biases and your, you know, all of those things, your gifts, like, but it's all of a piece, you know? And so I would love to hear you kind of just talk about that a bit. And I was also curious if that's connected to the title of the book in some sense.
Yeah, I think it is, absolutely. But yeah, I think that question of who are you is something that, if you're doing that kind of work, you're going to spend a lifetime answering. And I think that you know, so much of my work and my writing and my work around the tarot specifically is about cycles and is about growth and is about transformation and is about being conscious that we are in multiple cycles and multiple stories at any given moment. And who we are in our particular story at any given moment is generally changing. You know, we as humans are not stagnant. And the ways that we move into new experiences can shed light on past experiences, you know, and the ways that we react to certain challenges or victories or decisions or ambitions or desires or whatever, can help us understand more about who we are in that moment, as well as like what kind of path we are on to who we are becoming. And so I think the process of writing this book, but also just like where I am right now, is very much that like hermit moon energy of like looking really deep within, because I think especially when we're thinking about stories and narratives, it's not just about who we are, but it's also about who do we think we are, and like, mm-hmm. who do we believe we are, and how close is who we believe we are to who we actually are? Where are any disconnects in that? You know, that's something I've been thinking about so much lately, is like, how do the stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves compare to what our actions are actually saying, and like who we actually are deep down. Because that can be really difficult long-term work to kind of uncover the different layers that live between those two things. And so for me, like finding the fool, finding that everything and nothing, finding that desire that lives underneath our choices, like finding that thing that we want that is driving us forward towards something, is really pivotal to understanding who we actually are. And I mean, I think there are lots of ways to go about that work. And I think for most of us, you know, it's not just going to be one tool or one thing that we're using to do that work. But, for me, tarot and the figure of the fool in particular, just have so much to teach about that particular path of like self-discovery and learning who you are.
Yeah. Were there any cards or sections of the book that were more challenging for you to write than others?
Yeah. Certain cards are hard. Certain cards are really hard to write about, especially in a limited word limit, you know, because it was really important to me to have the majors feel really meaty and juicy and like full. But to have the minors not like get the shaft, you know what I mean? I feel like, mm-hmm. so many books, like the minors feel like such a throwaway when the minors are so important. The minors are so great. Mm-hmm. And the minors have so much to teach us, because often the minors are really what we're actually dealing with most of the time when we're pulling cards, you know, like if I pull a bunch of cards and they're all majors, I'm like, Christ, like, what are we doing here? You know, like, it's more likely that you're going to have like one or two majors and then mostly minors. And so I think it's really important to give the minors their due and to let them take up space and to give them the same consideration. But from a word count perspective, I was doing more with the majors. And so, but it's still a limited word count. You know, I still wanted them all to feel about the same length. And so there were a few majors, Temperance and the Devil, in particular, what are coming to mind right now, that I just really struggled, because I have so many ideas about, mm-hmm. those cards. And I think there are so many different ways to read and explore those cards. And you have to kind of commit to a few trains of thought. Like, I couldn't write a, you know, 2000 word essay on the Devil. I had to be like, okay, like, I got like six paragraphs. What are we going to say about this massive, complicated archetype?
Yeah. Well, I was actually going to ask you that. I mean, that's actually what has always kept me. There have been times where I'd be like, would I ever want to write a tarot book? But, mm-hmm. like, I think I've stayed away from it because of what you just were saying, that like, because this is an art form that, and a craft that like continually opens up, and like, there is no kind of definition of the cards.
Yeah.
Like, what did that feel like to have to commit to this book of like, this is what I'm going to write about this card, you know?
It's really hard, because it's like, I'm not neutral. Like, I'm a human being, like flesh and blood, with like all of my own baggage and history. And like, yeah, I'm an ex-evangelical queer person writing about the Devil in a way that needs to be accessible to anyone who might read the book. Like, that is not a small...
That's
a huge deal. And you know, certain things are just kind of impossible for me to get away from, even if I believe that they must be gotten away from, you know, like, I don't want to write about the Devil just as the Bible's version of Satan, or like Christian's version of Satan. Like, it's so much, mm-hmm. bigger than that. It's so much more interesting than that. But you kind of have to acknowledge that that's baggage that a lot of people are going to bring, myself included, when this card comes up, especially if it like pops up in a reading. You know, I think spending time deliberately engaging with an archetype or two is very different than like pulling a card in a reading. Mm-hmm. But But yeah, it's hard because you're trying to make space for what you believe is true about something. And also, like with my book, especially, I was trying so hard to be as expansive as possible and to nod to all of these different potential lenses that one could use to work with this card as possible in a very limited amount of space. And, you know, I don't want to not include my viewpoint, but the book is not about my viewpoint. The book is about my like process. The book is about my, yeah, like my ideas about how one can read tarot in a really useful way. But it's not like these are my personal interpretations for all of these cards. Right. And this is what this card means to me when it comes up. So yeah, it's a very delicate balance. I mean, I learned a lot about how I read and understand tarot in the process of writing the book. And I think any tarot book you wrote would be amazing. But it is definitely more complicated in that particular way than I think I expected when I was initially like, yeah, I'm all
right. Right.
I can do this.
Yeah. Well, tell us some of what you did learn through the process. I'm curious about that.
Yeah. I mean, what I was just talking about, like trying to differentiate my personal experiences with the cards versus everything I think that each card could potentially mean. You know, those are two very different things. And the way that, like, when I pull a card and have a feeling about it and work with it versus when I'm reading for a client or reading for a friend or reading for my partner or something, those are all going to be different experiences. And I don't necessarily read the card extremely differently, but tarot is all about the context, right? Like, these cards are all about context. And so I think that was a big thing for me, was thinking about the different ways that I lean on different definitions and different interpretations given the context of a reading or a study. And the other thing was just how important my idea of cycles is to my understanding of the tarot. Like, for me, working with individual cards, especially in like an intensive ongoing way for like a certain project or for like a self-study or like whatever you're doing, is a really powerful practice. And it's something I really believe can do so much for us as people, and as tarot readers, but on like a personal level, I think that that's a really powerful practice to engage in. But I never see cards in a vacuum. I never see them as a stagnant moment, that exists separate from what came before and what's coming after. And so I think for me, like thinking about how each card is emerging from whatever came before it and how it is setting the stage and building to and moving towards whatever the card that comes after it does. And that when I had initially thought about the book, I wasn't thinking about how that was going to end up playing such a big piece of it, but it ended up being like that when I was writing it, I wanted everything to feel really woven together. And I wanted to constantly be nodding, this is where we're coming from, this is where we're going towards. Like, I wanted to always be nodding to that idea, because to me, it's so central to how I understand individual cards, is by understanding the broader cycle and understanding the story that we're in. I can't divorce a card from the card that came before it the card that came after. And that is so much more important to my practice and my understanding of tarot than I think I realized before I started writing the book.
Yeah, I love that. So if someone, let's say someone is brand new to tarot and they grab your book off the shelf and purchase it, what is your greatest hope for that person that they'll kind of get from that book?
I think my real hope is that if someone is interested in tarot and they read my book, that they will come away from it feeling like, tarot can be for me. I can do this. This is a practice that I can engage in. Whatever form it takes, whatever I end up doing with it or using it for, whether it's for me or whether I read for other people or whether I don't do readings at all, but just use it to inspire creativity or, you know, ask myself questions or whatever. I think my hope is that the takeaway that anyone will have from this book is that tarot can be for you if you want it. Like, and it doesn't matter what your skill set is or what your identity is or what deck you're working with or what your history is. Tarot has room for all of us. And it doesn't matter if you're like me and don't pick up a deck and immediately understand it, or speak its language, like that is still something that you can learn, and you can use it for what you need it for. And it will meet you in those moments of need, in the way that you want it to, and you can learn to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. So thank you so much. This has been an awesome conversation.
My pleasure.
Yeah. I'm going to finish by asking you a question I ask all my guests, which is, what are you in search of right now in your life?
Oh boy. So you're just ending with something really light and easy.
Yeah.
Super chill. I mean, like we talked about it a little bit, but right now I am very much in search of understanding myself, you know, on the heels of this book and, you know, dealing with some personal things right now and thinking about where I want to go next. I'm really grappling with that question that I mentioned of like, who have I thought I am versus who am I actually? And how do those things line up and how might they contradict each other? And what process of transformation and rebirth am I actually in right now that I perhaps didn't even realize because I've been so focused on writing and, you know, promoting a book and all of the other things that one does in their yeah. life and their work. I'm really right now, I'm really in search of the truth about myself, I think, and trying to learn more about who I am and what's going to feed this next kind of stage of my life. So just really small, super chill, like just very easy questions. I'm sure I'll be done in a day or two.
Right. Awesome. Well, let's let people know how they can find you and follow you. And of course, how can they purchase the book?
Absolutely. So the book is available anywhere books are sold. Wider is a worldwide distributor. So you can find it on Amazon. You can find it on Bookshop. You can find it on IndieBound. I love independent bookstores. So if you have a local independent bookstore, that's always what I ask people to do. Even if it's not witchy, they can order it. They can get it for you. So please support your local bookstores. They are the heart and soul of literary work and we need them and we can't let them get gobbled up. But if all you have is Amazon or Barnes and Noble, that is okay. I'm not judging you. Do what you need to do. Get the book. Also, it's available digitally. So if that's, there aren't pictures, I think it probably translates pretty well to digital. So,
yeah.
But you can find me at megjoneswall.com or at 3amtarot.com. I have a newsletter, which is what I am really directing people towards these days. It's called Devils and Fools. It's hosted on Ghost and you can find the direct link via my social media or my website. I am still on Instagram and Twitter in spite of everything.
I am
3am.tarot on Instagram and I am at megjoneswall, on Twitter for as long as Twitter is Twitter. But my website is really the easiest place to find it. You can get links to all my social, my newsletter, my writings, my book, everything is there.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Meg. This has really been a great conversation. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me. I've been looking forward to this and it was even better than I imagined.
In Search of Tarot is independently written, recorded, edited, and transcribed by Nick Kepley and Angie Miller. You can follow Angie on Instagram at birdgirl_, that's birdgerhl_, and you can follow me, Nick, on Instagram at In Search of Tarot. Have a question or a comment? Email us at isotpod@gmail.com. We also invite you to leave us a rating and review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.